Hello, everybody, and welcome to another episode of Every Horror Movie on Netflix, the show where we watch, review, and discuss every horror movie on Netflix. I'm Patrick, and I'm back, as always, with my co-hosts, Allison with a Y.
Hello.
And Allison with an I.
Hey.
And we are reconvening today for our monthly horror catch-up. It's been more than a month, I think. I don't know. We had some weird scheduling things. So we've got a lot to catch up on this month. We have, like, basically the entirety of spooky month, October, to, like, review in delayed fashion. But yeah, it's that episode where we talk about all the things that we have been watching and reading and consuming that aren't Netflix horror movies. And to kick us off today, so Allison with a Y and I went to Motor City Comic Con in the Detroit area near where we live this past weekend for my birthday, and there was a big Flanagan-verse event. Like Mike Flanagan was there, Kate Siegel was there, Hamish Linklater was there. If you've watched Midnight Mass, if you've watched Mike Flanagan material at all, these names are familiar to you. If not, you're like, huh. And in that case, just skip ahead. But why? You had a very exciting experience that I was like a very second party to with one of these people.
Yeah, okay, I've never paid to meet a celebrity at a con before. It's kind of against my beliefs. But I saw Hamish, and I knew that if I didn't meet that man, I would regret it, maybe for the rest of my life.
And why did he mean so much to you? Why were the stakes so high? Other than that he's really, really hot.
He's a very handsome man. Oh my goodness.
He is handsome.
Wow, very tall, unexpectedly tall.
And just as ruggedly handsome up close, if not more so than you would expect based on movies and television.
Yeah, he's like even better looking and like taller than you would think, which is, you know, anyway, that's not the point. That's not important. Midnight Mass is one of my favorite pieces of horror media, if not media, of all time. I think it is just like one of the most brilliantly constructed limited series, whatever you want to call it, ever put together. I think it is Flanagan's greatest work. I think it is truly one of the greatest works of horror ever. And Hamish Linklater is such a huge part of why it's amazing, because he gives an amazing performance, an amazing performance. So I was like, I need to meet this man. Also, he's very attractive. And by the time, like, I got around to even, like, thinking about, like, scoping out the celebs, Mike Flanagan had already peaced out. So that wasn't even an option at that point anyways.
Which is going to be a bummer to our Discord people, because we briefly talked / joked about meeting Mike Flanagan and doing a photo op with him where we held up masks of the Mike Flanagan emoji that you can use to react to things on our Discord. So sorry, Discord, but also I never made the masks anyway, so it wasn't going to happen in the first place.
So he peaced out and took Kate with him, presumably?
Yes. Oh. Yeah, which was unfortunate, because I would have loved to have beheld her beauty in person.
Yes.
Anyways, so yeah, so I met Hamish Linklater, and I got a selfie with him. But not only that, like, you know, obviously, like, you chat with these people a little bit. I walk up to him. I'm wearing my favorite sweatshirt that says Future Corpse on it. From the Death Positive movement. And he asks me about it. He's like, Future Corpse? That's interesting. What's that? And so I tell him about the Death Positive movement. And he's like very curious, very interested. And he's like, you know, I wrote a one-act play a while ago that I think is very Death Positive. And it all ends in a cemetery. And so he told me about that, and I wrote it down, and I am kind of interested in, like, putting it up somewhere because it sounds super interesting. And it was just, it was a lovely time. I I walked away feeling like I had just had a meet cute. I was so
giddy. Aww.
And like, I'm embarrassed that I was really giddy, but I, you know what? It was worth it. It was worth it. And I will, I'll post the picture of me and Hamish to our socials.
Maybe we'll even make it the cover image for this episode.
Ooh.
We have exciting. To.
But I mean, you didn't tell the most important part of this story though, which is that there was a screenplay sitting on Hamish's table, and the title page of it said "The Labubu" by Mike Flanagan,
starring Hamish Linklater.
And I, you know, Allison and Hamish are having this conversation, and I'm just kind of hanging back for the most part. I mean, I love Hamish, but I wanted you to, you know, get to do your thing. I didn't want to be a third wheel on your date with Hamish.
I appreciate that.
And so I'm looking at this screenplay, and when you guys kind of had finished talking, I was like, I like pointed at it, and I'm like, I got to ask you, what's up with this? And he, like, his face got so dark, like a storm cloud crossed his face, and he was like, someone left that here for me. And he, like, was flipping through it, showing it to us, and on every page was just all work and no play makes Jack a dull boy in, like, different, like, orientations and kind of on top of each other, you know, like The Shining, basically. Mm-hmm. And that was the whole thing. I guess that was the bit. And he just looked so confused and kind of, like, disheartened by it. And I said, I bet that's not even close to the weirdest thing someone's given you. And he just kind of shook his head and was just like, I mean, he didn't say anything, but it was very, like, you have no idea.
I saw the light leave his eyes.
Oh, yes. So anyways, The Labubu by Mike Flanagan, not coming to Netflix soon.
Yeah, but yeah, it was a delightful meet. And he was just a really cool, thoughtful, you know, grounded person. That was cool.
God bless him.
I can't believe we've never talked about our shared love for Midnight Mass.
It's so good.
It's so good. I think that's the first. That's the first time I think I've seen him, or like, I think that was my introduction to him as an actor.
Same.
I had definitely seen him in stuff before, but just in like smaller roles, not dominating the way he does in that.
Yeah.
But yeah, the year that came out on the podcast, particularly Steven and I, just like wouldn't shut the fuck up about it. I think we both gave it some, you know, some AMON awards at the end of the year.
Oh, yeah. Amazing.
Well, Allison, with an eye, I know that you have been taking in a very popular new horror series. Tell us about It. Welcome to Derry.
Yeah. So I do not, unfortunately, have HBO. So I've been only able to watch this when I'm at my boyfriend's house. So I think we've seen two episodes, but oh my goodness gracious, did they come out strong. I didn't know how to feel about this. Like, obviously love the It franchise, love Stephen King, obviously our listeners know that about me, I think. But, you know, I'm sort of the belief now that it's like, why do we have to prequel, sequel, second, third, fourth every good movie? Like, some things you just have to leave alone. So I went into watching this series with a fair bit of, like, skepticism, I guess. Maybe, like, more discernment. And holy fucking shit, is it crazy. It is out the gate, absolute batshit insanity. Like, the story is really, really cool. The acting is great so far. But the, like, gore level or just, like, just disgusting. Disgusting level of what they're willing to do, and they were happy to show you that just episode one was like, oh fuck, I was not expecting any of that. So I've seen two episodes so far. I know I'm late to the party because there are I think there's a third and maybe a fourth out, but we have not yet seen Pennywise, which is interesting.
Oh.
So there's a lot of world building and a lot of plot building before Pennywise even is shown, which I think is cool.
Yeah, I think that, you know, if it's done right, that works well. especially in like long form storytelling like this.
Well, yeah, especially because, you know, as the King heads will know, there's a lot more to it than Pennywise. And, you know, you would expect maybe that they would just go for like Pennywise as soon as possible to like keep the casuals interested. But yeah, that's good to know that they're not necessarily banking on that.
Or like selling out, which it could feel like if they just exploited Pennywise as a monster. But yeah, I was really surprised. Like I was looking at the credits, you know, like when you load up a show, it's got the cast before you press play. And I was like, weird. And then the second one, I was like, weird. And then I'm like, okay, this is cool. Like they're not just banking on that as the big draw. So far, I love it. I have nothing bad to say about it. Patrick, I would be interested as another Stephen King lover to see what you have to think if you get around to watching it.
Yeah, I'll have to check it out. I don't know if I've avoided it necessarily so far. I just haven't had like high interest just because, I mean, the two movies that came out in, you know, the last, whenever those were, were fine. I just wasn't like crazy about them. And so I was like, I don't know if I like need to revisit this universe, but that's interesting to hear. I mean, maybe I'll check it out.
I like it a lot so far. So yeah, curious to see what others think about it.
I know you also checked out Frankenstein, which we did last episode about because we're shitty friends and we went to the movie without you. But you caught up to it. I don't know. Did you see it in the theater on Netflix?
I didn't. I saw it on Netflix. Patrick and I talked about how it had a really weird limited run in our town and all the towns, but we both looked for it one day and it wasn't there. And then the next day I got a text from Patrick and Y being like, we saw Frankenstein. I'm like, how? it's not anywhere. And happened to show up the day after I looked. So I was late to that party too, but oh my God, what is there to say about this movie that hasn't been said already by literally everyone that's seen it? It's exquisite. It's absolutely beautiful. I saw a funny meme that was like, how much to build Jacob Elordi in my basement? It was like, yes. My biggest takeaway was my fucking heart was broken that entire movie. I was just, I like loved the creature with a mother's love. And I was just like, I would take him in and I would be his friend and I would read with him and all the things. And I don't know, man, what a beautiful film. We've had some real bangers in the last couple of years with these gothic remakes of classic gothic horror. And I just feel happy to be here. Patrick, you've been doing some horror reading. Speaking of, what have you been getting into?
I read a bunch of horror graphic novels in Spooky Month. I didn't watch as many horror movies in Spooky Month as I usually do, but I was reading a lot. I kicked it off with a really fucked up comic book series called Beneath the Trees Where Nobody Sees. And if you're, you know, if you're a comics nerd, you probably already heard about this one. If not, probably not. But it is written and drawn by an extremely talented creator named Patrick Horvath. And it is this fucked up, I think it's been described like the tagline is something like the Silence of the Lambs meets Busy Town.
Oh.
And it's it is a serial killer story set in like your Busy Town sort of setting with like anthropomorphic animals in this like idyllic small town. And there is this bear named Samantha who is beloved in her small town, but she's a serial killer. And she goes to the big city to kill people, cut them up, and bury them.
Wait, if you could see Elsa with a Y's face right now, they look thoroughly confused.
That's why I paused. I was like, all right, you got a piece to say.
Do her fellow towns animals know what she does?
No, that's why she goes to the city, so that nobody knows.
Well, I thought maybe she did it just to do it to people and not to other animals. I don't know.
Oh, no, the city is also populated by animals. No humans show up in the story. Oh, yeah.
That's unfortunate.
Yeah.
I was all on board. She was serial killing people.
That would be an interesting story, actually. I would be into that. I mean, I don't understand what he's doing here necessarily, like why he decided on this sort of premise slash setting slash anthropomorphic animals, but I love it. The art is gorgeous. He is such a talented artist, and horrifying because it has incredibly graphic violence, you know, presented in, you know, storybook type illustrations and these, you know, kind of warm watercolory looking colors. It is such a weird fucking book. And he's in the midst. So I read the collection of the first series he did, which is a complete story. And now there's a second series coming out that's continuing this story of this killer, Samantha. So I guess, surprise, spoiler, she does not get caught at the end of the first story. And it is expanding in a really interesting way in the second book. And I'm very, very interested to see where it goes next. But just a absolutely bizarre concept, very well executed. In a perhaps slightly more traditional vein, I also read The Deviant, which is a series, two graphic novel story by the author James Tinian IV and the illustrator Joshua Hickson. And this guy, James Tinian IV, has been on my radar for a little bit. I'm a superhero comics nerd. He wrote some Batman comics a couple years ago. They were forgettable at best. And my understanding is he got pretty burnt out by the mainstream comics industry, and so he struck out on his own and has been doing all kinds of original properties since then. And I think this was the first one of his original books that I had read, and it was pretty incredible, actually. It's actually about a comics artist who is trying to write a graphic novel about a series of murders that happened a few decades ago. And basically every character in the book is queer, which I thought was very interesting. You don't see that often. At least I should say every main character in the book is queer. So this graphic novelist is a young gay man, and he goes to prison to interview the guy who was convicted of the killings years ago, who is also gay, and his sexuality played heavily into him being incriminated for these crimes. You get the idea pretty quickly that he didn't do it, although he is more than a little morally suspect himself, regardless. It was really well done. The only thing that disappointed me was kind of the resolution to the mystery at the end of the second book was not bad, just a little bit of a letdown, I think. But most of the journey getting there and the character work that was done, the art is incredible. Really, really interesting story. And that led me to check out one last graphic novel I'll plug, James Tinian IV's other new series that's been going on. It's called Exquisite Corpses, and where The Deviant is like kind of chilly and very like grounded in the real world, Exquisite Corpses is completely insane. It feels like a B-movie on acid. It's this concept where essentially, America is ruled by 13 families in this story, which, you know, not too far from real life. But they go back to the original 13 colonies. So there's a family that represents each of the 13 states. And every, I think it's 4 years or something in the book, they each choose a serial killer to deploy in some small town that they have arranged to be walled off from the rest of the world, the rest of the country. And basically whoever's serial killer kills the most people and the most other serial killers first is the family that gets to rule America for the next 4 years.
I hate that.
It is so ridiculous. And yet, you know, I mean, the political commentary is sledgehammer as fuck. But it is so entertaining. These serial killers are each so unique and bizarre and colorful and over the top. And it has just been an absolute blast to read so far. And there are also some protagonists in the town that are not, you know, the rich Illuminati or the serial killers. So there's something there for you to invest in characters for you to care about. That's ongoing right now. I read the first collection of it from the library, and I immediately went out to the comic book store the next day and bought the issues that had come out since the first collection, because I was like, I gotta know where this is going next. It's just insane shit happening every issue, and I'm excited to continue following that. But yeah, that's James Tynion IV and kind of an ensemble of other writers and artists who are working on that, but loving Exquisite Corpses. Allison with a Y, I know you've also been doing some reading lately.
Yeah, I listened to this audiobook called Sisters of the Lost Nation by Nick Medina, and it is part folk horror, part thriller, that around the issue of missing and murdered Indigenous women and Two-Spirit people. And it was very... It really captured me. The mystery aspect of it really, like, kept me wanting to turn the pages. And there was also a really unsettling aspect with bringing in kind of some Indigenous folklore. And the author took inspiration, like the folklore that they used was kind of made up, but it was inspired by legends from different tribes of North America. And the legend that is basically like the one that he thought of, that he created for it, is very unsettling, very creepy. Very, very strong imagery, and I really liked it. It was interesting to read kind of more of a horror novel around Indigenous issues. I mean, obviously, this is a huge issue that is extremely prevalent throughout North America, missing and murdered Indigenous women and Two-Spirits people. It's an issue that I followed and I've tried to learn about for a long time. And I felt like this book was really well done. Obviously, it helps, you know, the author he's Indigenous himself. And I'm pretty sure he did a lot of research and actually, like, talked to families of women who have been missing or murdered, to really try to capture what that's like in their communities and what the communities go through, and try to tell that those stories of, like, how that really affects, you know, these communities in very real, very difficult ways. But I thought it was really well done, and it was a pretty easy read. It moved really well, and it kind of jumps time a little bit. So you're getting kind of context, different contexts at different points that really help bring the story together. So yeah, I really liked it. And you have another movie to talk about, right?
I do. I finally, at the insistence of my partner, watched a movie that he had been raving about since we first met, called I Saw the Devil. And it was one of those that I was like, have I seen this? Have I not? Classic me. Realized that I had not seen it, and it was amazing. So it's a 2010 South Korean horror action, I guess it's action thriller film, but definitely on the horror side of the thriller spectrum. It follows a serial killer whose first victim is basically the wrong lady to mess with. Because it turns out that have you seen this movie, either of you?
I'm, you know, when you said I wasn't sure if I'd seen it before or not, I'm almost certain I have, but it was right around when it came out. So I have very little memory of it other than it being fucking crazy.
Yeah, it's fucking crazy. So his first victim is the wrong lady to mess with, because it turns out that her husband, is a detective who ends up working her case, very intimately, obviously, but also, like, the biggest badass motherfucker ever. So this husband ends up and so very good looking. I think this actor is very big, like kind of heartthrob in the South Korean thriller action market. I think action market, because there was definitely like some martial arts in the movie that are like, you're like, holy shit, that guy's, what can't he do? But it's cool. Like, it's one of those, like, the hunter ends up becoming the hunted types of movies where it follows the serial killer as he continues to wreak havoc, but this protagonist is getting increasingly closer to him and starting to really, like, haunt his life with the revenge of killing his wife. So, super cool storyline. The way that they work with it, like the POV changes quite a bit. So you're watching from, you know, the husband's point of view. You're watching from the serial killer's point of view. The husband becomes killer. The serial killer becomes haunted. It's just very, very, very cool. I couldn't believe I actually was like, I don't know how this hasn't even been on my radar. It's got a title that sounds like so many other horror movies that I've seen. But I couldn't believe I hadn't seen it, and I was so glad I did. So yeah, that's a big. I would recommend that one to anyone who has missed it since 2010.
That really makes me want to rewatch that, because that was so acclaimed. I mean, like, you know, sleeper hit, like indie acclaimed when it came out. And I do remember enjoying it, but I just don't remember a damn thing about it. And you re-explaining the premise makes me like, that sounds fucking awesome. And I need to see that again.
Yeah, it was. It was enough that my partner was like, let's watch this. Let's, like, every time we would sit down to watch a movie and like we'd have to find a stream or whatever. But he'd been talking about it for a while. So I was like, let's fucking spooky season it. And glad I did.
Nice. Hell yeah.
Pitching it back to Patrick and why. You guys have another movie to talk about.
We do.
Yeah, right around, I think it was right before Halloween, we decided to like do like a little spooky movie night. And I had just heard of this movie that hadn't come across my radar previously called Your Monster. That was basically, I guess...
horror rom-com.
Yeah, advertised to me as a horror rom-com.
Yeah. It would make a great double feature with, what was that fucking movie we watched earlier? Hard Eyes.
Would have made a great double feature with that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, we watched it. It wasn't as much horror as I wanted, but it was a fun time.
And it does end on quite a horror note. Being mostly a pretty chill movie about a girl falling in love with her, like, childhood monster under her bed.
Yeah.
I mean, a woman. I should say a woman because, yes, like, the girl is grown up. It's not, like, a little kid falling in love with the monster under her bed. But she's an adult now. And the monster who, you know, tormented her in childhood turns out to be a romantic interest.
Yeah, still living in her childhood home that she goes, like, she moves back into for a little while. And he's like, hey, I don't want you here. This is my place now. I've gotten used to being alone here, and I really like it.
No.
What was the actor's name who played the monster again? I know he's notable, and I already forgot.
Tommy Dewey. He was in the Mindy Project, the show The Mindy Project, the first season, played one of her love interests, who was kind of an asshole.
Then, aren't they all on that show?
And then he was in this show that I really liked. There was like maybe two or three seasons of it called Casual, and he was the lead in it. And he was really good in that. So I was excited to see him again, because I feel like he's way more talented than like the amount of work he seems to get. He's so funny. He has such a dry delivery of things.
He was very good in this. He was probably my favorite thing about it. It didn't do much for me in general, which is not really a knock on the movie. I think what it sets out to do, it accomplishes. It's just for such a specific audience, which is rom-com enthusiasts, horror enthusiasts, and you just got to be some degree of a theater kid, I think, to enjoy this.
It really, really, you know, hit a lot of buttons for me.
Yeah, which, I mean, I'm not a theater kid, and I'm not a rom-com enthusiast necessarily. I enjoy a good rom-com, but it's just so, you have to be like really squarely down for at least two of those three things.
Yeah, for sure. It was a fun time, though.
Is it new, or?
It came out last year.
Oh, okay.
So yeah, it's like newer. Yeah, it was fun. Like I said, I don't think it was a perfect movie. There were some plot holes that some questions I would have liked answered. But, you know, for a quick, like, hour and a half movie, it moves well and delivers some fun little emotional punches. And if you hate it, then you're probably a monster.
Oh, bless. Well, to close us out here today, we've got kind of a preview of a major event in horror Netflix television coming up, and also a big troll, because I love a big troll. But Allison with an I is going to tell us a little bit about how you've been getting ready for the new season and new final season of Stranger Things, which is by rewatching the whole damn thing, right?
Yeah. I'm not making as much progress as I wish I were, because they're long.
And they're long.
They are long.
And they're going to get longer.
They're going to get longer. My daughter and I knocked out like 5 in one day, and I was like, I think we watched too much TV, but it's, I have to say, my interest is reignited in this show. I ended up on like Stranger Things TikTok by accident, and people are talking. I just have to preface this by saying there is such a crazy, nerdy, biggest nerds ever subculture for people that are all Stranger Things all the time that I don't think I totally understood. Like, and also, this show came out 10 years ago.
Jesus.
10 years ago. And they're, you know, slow to put out seasons. But I was like, you know, watching some of these TikToks of people recapping and doing fan theories and deep dives. And I was like, I don't even know what you're talking about. I don't remember any of this. Like, I watched this show probably in real time every season that it came out, but it's been so fucking long.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
And I think I took a lot of the story at face value, but it has been actually really, really fun. I was like, okay, I'm going to get off Stranger Things talk and get into Stranger Things Reddit because I don't want every TikTok video I watch to be about Stranger Things. So I joined the Reddit community, and oh boy, is it a just nerd convention over there. But it's been really, really, really fun to, like I said, I took this show at face value, and there's so much more, I think, if you want there to be. Like, I think it's the kind of show that people have rewatched a lot of times, and, you know, we've got like D&D people and then sci-fi people, and they're just a whole breed of creatures that are so interesting. But just to see like the layers and the depth of this show from other perspectives, you know, like I'll read sort of like a fan theory that's maybe popular, and then I'm watching this, rewatching the show through the lens of could this be some of what the outcome is in season 5 possibly. And it's fun. It's like really fun to kind of rewatch it through a different lens. And obviously I'm older. My daughter's older. She was 11 for Halloween one year. So she's been a fan of the show since the beginning. But she's like, oh, I've seen the show front and back a bunch of times, because I think it's, you know, pretty popular with her generation. But I hadn't seen it a bunch of times. So I'm now into season 2. Season 5 starts on the 26th of November. I'm going to be tied up with family, so I'm going to have to avoid so many spoilers. And there's no way that I'm going to get 2 whole seasons in between now and a week from now. It's impossible.
Yeah.
But I'm trying, because I'm remembering so many details.
Yeah, I think the rewatch challenge that you're describing is why I feel like I'm not actually going to wind up watching the final season. Like, I have watched the whole thing up until this point, and I enjoyed it for the most part. Like, I find it to be a pretty charming show. I mean, it's had its, you know, slow or dull moments, but for the most part, I'm pretty into it. I've just never been, like, a super fan, and it's been so fucking long since the last season that I barely remember where it was at. And fundamentally, I don't want to watch 2-hour-long episodes, you know? Like, is it 8 episodes, I think, for the final season? Something like that?
No.
Like, the length of it was crazy to me.
What I do know,
my level of investment has just dipped so far that I'm like,
I know.
I'll hear whatever happens.
No, you have to finish it at some point. Like, don't you feel like it's the kind of show you have to finish at some point?
I don't. I've never been really? Like, I've enjoyed it. I've never been like super fan, you know?
Listen, I wasn't either. And I think that this rewatch is doing a lot of favors for me, mostly for Netflix, but it is also Netflix's biggest ever show, which I don't think I realized until somebody put that into words. And I was like, that actually makes a lot of sense. But I kind of like that they're doing like it's split up into three volumes. So volume one comes out Thanksgiving Eve. Volume two comes out Christmas Day. Volume three is on New Year's Eve. And that one's going to be in theaters.
Oh, right.
Which I think is I'm going to try to take my kiddo and whoever else wants to go and like go see the movie on New Year's Eve or go see the finale on New Year's Eve. But I don't know, man. I'm back in and I'm all in and I'm thrilled. I feel kind of delighted to be here. Like it's a fun little world that I'm back in.
Well, God bless. I'll look forward to you telling me all about it.
Oh my gosh. It's so, you know, Patrick, I would think this would be like right up your alley, just what I know about you. But I get that
it's not. Yeah, I just like the, because the time investment to like catch back up and then the time investment of watching the season itself is just so great for something that, again, like I liked it. It was fine. It was fine. You know, how are you feeling about the new season? Why?
I'm just angry that they took this long to
to
wrap it up.
Yeah.
So it's like I feel a lot of, I don't know, resistance to watching it because I'm like, why did this all have to take this long?
Yeah.
They're not kids anymore. You can't convince me that they're kids.
Oh, Millie Bobby Brown has a baby now. She has a child.
Right.
What?
Yeah.
Oh.
She was like 11 or 12 in the first season, and they were babies.
That's so insane. Hard for me to feel like I enjoyed the last season. I enjoyed a lot about it, but it was like, it was really, with the age stuff, it was really starting to lose me. And this one, and it's been how many years? Since that season.
I think at least three.
3 or 4 years.
I wonder if there'll be like a flash forward in the show.
Yeah, there's a flash forward. Could I know be. They're doing a lot like, of like de-aging.
3 years later or something, if it actually takes place a bit after the last season or something.
But they haven't really been doing that yet. They haven't done it in I don't know. Yeah. I just am like, why do you have to take this long to tell this story? And like, could you have made this series a little bit shorter? You know, so I just, at this point, I just feel like they're just really trying to milk a lot of things out of it. And I'm good.
I mean, that said, I am fairly susceptible to like the zeitgeist pressure. So if people are into it and talking about it a lot, I probably will hit that point where I'm like, ah, fuck. All right. Let me see what people are talking about.
I'm so excited. But to give them some grace, you know, a bunch of those years were COVID years. So it's, I think that the stretch wasn't totally on them, but then they did milk it afterwards. You're like, come on, let's do this. But you know, now
wrap
that I'm on.
Wrap it up, folks.
Yeah, wrap it up. But I'm only on season two, so the kids haven't aged that much where it's becoming annoying yet. But I am interested to go into seasons 3 and 4 now with my fresh perspective to see if I'm annoyed by that.
Yeah.
Well, we'll talk about it more, I guess, on the next catch-up, but...
Yeah. Interested to hear more about it. Interested to see if future Patrick has watched it.
Me too.
Because I'm not counting it out. It might happen. It might happen. We'll see. What's the first, like, volume? Is it 3 episodes or something? 2, 3?
Volume 1 is episodes 1 through 4.
Oh, wow. Okay. Oh, so this is like is it a 12-episode season?
It's 8, yeah. Wait. Nope, I'm reading that wrong. Episodes 1 through 4, volume 1. Episodes 5 through 7, volume 2. Episode 8 to series finale. So it must be 9.
Oh, okay.
I'm guessing that's what that means.
Interesting. Interesting. Well, I promised I was going to end the show with a troll today, so here it is. I watched fucking Morbius.
What is
Please hold your applause. Oh, what is Morbius? Oh, I'm so glad you asked. Morbius is one of the most critically panned biggest box office bombs of the past few years. It is a Marvel movie ostensibly based on an extremely obscure character who is a vampire, played by Jared Leto. And I have no idea why this movie exists other than Sony wanting to milk the fuck out of their increasingly tenuous connection to the Spider-Man franchise and to Marvel more generally. And it's, I guess I was going to say it did not disappoint, but it did disappoint in the exact way that I expected it to. It is dull as fuck. Jared Leto, I do not understand why this man keeps getting work. He just constantly seems like an alien playing a human. Like, he is not an actor. I mean, okay, no. I've seen him in a couple of things where he has been fine. But for the most part, he acts like an alien portraying a human. And everyone around him in this movie has the exact same thing. Like, Matt Smith is in this movie.
Like Doctor Who Matt Smith?
Doctor Who Matt Smith, who I like, generally. I have never seen a minute of Doctor Who in my life, but I really liked him in the other things that I've seen him in. And he plays, like, Jared Leto's old college buddy. And these two together, like, doing this sort of, oh, you kind of banter to each other, like old buddies catching up, is some of the most stilted shit I have ever seen. Like, the dialogue itself is bad. But then Matt Smith also is just, like, joining Jared Leto on his weird level of, like, playing, like, behaving as though he's never seen a human in real life before.
It's got a 15% like Rotten Tomatoes score.
Yep. That's yep. Impressive. And I forget what the box office situation was, but it was fucking pathetic. Morbius. I guess if you wanna, I mean, here's the thing, is it's not even one of those movies where I'm gonna be like, put it on with your pals if you want like a good laugh. It is just dull for long stretches. Like, the funny stuff, like Matt Smith and Jared Leto trying to have like witty banter is few and far between. The weird ass transformation sequences are like not really worth it. Jared Leto and Matt Smith both end up becoming vampires. Spoiler, I guess. You're not supposed to know that Matt Smith becomes a vampire, but who gives a fuck? And they like fly around the city in these like sort of tornadoes of color, but they don't have wings.
Or a cape.
I guess Morbius, Jared Leto's character, has a cape at times, but it doesn't really like function as wings. I don't know. It's just really strange. It's really strange. I'm actually glad I watched it, I guess, but also would not recommend to anyone. So, anyways.
Michael Keaton's in it?
Oh, that's fucking insane, too. So, I mean, like, Michael Keaton was in one of the Tom Holland Spider-Man movies, which is done by Marvel, which is obviously under Disney. And there's this weird relationship between Disney and Sony, and the two like Spider-Man universes are sort of connected from time to time. And so they like shoehorn this weird like stinger, like post-credits scene cameo for Michael Keaton's character into this movie that makes no sense.
Oh,
and I guarantee you will never be followed up on. So strange.
A movie so bad even Michael Keaton couldn't make it better.
Couldn't rescue it. Yeah. But I mean, also, he doesn't have a chance to because he's in a post-credit scene. Like, they dump him in at the last minute for people to be like, oh, look at that. What are they going to do with that?
Oh,
nothing.
God.
They're never going to do anything with that.
Good to know. Don't watch that.
Yeah. Anyways, next episode, I think we will be watching not to tip my hat that I know where this is going. But I think we're going to be watching a vampire movie that'll be a little better than that. Not that anything could really be worse. And Allison with a Y is going to tell us what it is. What the hell are we watching?
We're watching another Dracula film.
Oh, boy.
But this is the 1979 Dracula featuring Frank Langella as Dracula and also starring Laurence Olivier.
Oh. And Donald Pleasance, yeah, well. Dr. Loomis of Halloween fame.
Oh, yeah. Oh.
And I knew that this was going to be your pick because we had a little Halloween party. We put this on in the background and, you know, we had a bunch of people. Nobody was paying that much attention to it. But anytime we did, we were like, this looks interesting.
Yeah.
Why is Frank Langella so hot?
Yeah.
So yeah, we thought it deserved a little closer look.
Yes.
Both of us.
So next time we shall be discussing the 1979 Dracula. Because apparently this is just becoming a Dracula podcast.
Yeah, exactly. It's going to be real hard to beat Bram Stoker's, but
fair. That is a hard one to beat.
Yeah. All right, well, we'll be watching that next episode. Until then, visit our website, everyhorrormovieonnetflix.com. You can find a list of all our episodes out there, as well as a link to our merch store where you can get all kinds of goods with Every Horror Movie on Netflix art on them.
And you can also find us on social media at Facebook, Instagram, Blue Sky, YouTube at Amon Cast, EHMONCAST, and TikTok at Amon Podcast. And then you can join our Discord server. We have a link to it in the show notes where you can come discuss all the fun things, all the, you know, horror things. Don't try to discuss other fun things with us on there.
You can share cat pics. There's a few, there's limited topics you can discuss outside.
Only horror and Mike Flanagan.
But yeah, you can follow the link in the show notes to join our Discord server and come chat with us about horror stuff there.
And leave us a review anywhere you listen to your podcast. We would appreciate it so much.
Well, that wraps up another banger of an episode of Horror Catch Up. We will see you next episode for Dracula 1979. And as we mentioned a few episodes ago, we're cutting back our episode production a little bit. And this month, we're just going to bring you 3 episodes. So we're going to skip next week. It's Thanksgiving. We all need a week off. We're not going to release an episode on motherfucking Thanksgiving.
That's how we're showing our gratitude for you all.
Exactly. But we will be back in the saddle for Dracula 1979 the week after that. We'll see you then. For Every Horror Movie on Netflix, I'm Patrick.
I'm Allison with a Y.
And Allison with an I.
See you next time.